Big Blue Insider is on News Radio 630 WLAP and the iHeartRadio app. To interact with the show, call us at 859-280-2287. That's 859-280-CATS. Or you can tweet us at Big Blue Insider 1. Now, here's Dick Gabriel.
Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider, hour number two of our show, as we roll into Saturday. It's game day, Kentucky and Auburn. We have been talking about this game ad nauseum, I would think, in the minds of some. But, you know, when you got to wait an extra month for college football, that kind of thing happens. And as we've mentioned earlier, a lot of people believe this is the most intriguing matchup in all of Southeastern Conference football this weekend. In fact, a lot of the experts said that the moment the schedule was released. And a guy who's been working hard to gather opinions and predictions is Ben Roberts, who's been with us many times. He's back on the Celebrity Hotline after gathering opinions of both local and national media people. How are you tonight, Ben?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We are well, thanks. And our own Aaron Gershon was involved in the polling. Let me ask you in a general sense, Ben, your lead was basically in the newspaper about the respect that's been building nationally, or regionally at least, for Mark Stoops' program. Were you prepared for that kind of reaction from the regional and semi-regional media people?
Yeah, I really was not. I mean, obviously, I think everybody thinks everybody thinks Mark Stoops has done a heck of a job with what he's done here in the last 8 years, but they also think that this is going to be one of his better teams, if not his best team so far at Kentucky. But, I mean, obviously, when everything changed and they threw that 10-team All-SEC schedule out there, that changes a lot. And you don't get those non-conference cupcake games, and you get a losable game pretty much every week. So the fact that we got so many 6-4 and 7-3 reactions, not just from inside the state, but from people from SEC Network people, from other SEC beat writers nationally, that was a little surprising. And then the fact that a lot of these people outside the state just specifically talked about how Kentucky football's perception has changed in their areas of the country, and specifically how Mark Stoops is being viewed in those areas, was also pretty enlightening.
Yeah, I really found that interesting. And as you said, a lot of 6-4, 7-3, and, you know, don't be surprised if they win an eighth game. A couple of 5-5s. Now, as I recall, I saw one guy said, 4-6, and yet was still complimentary of the program.
Yeah, I think we had two from the SEC beat writers, 2 4-6s, and in both of those cases, they were both like, you know, in a normal year, you know, this is probably – 7-5 or better team, but just with that SEC schedule and the grind of that and the unknown of that, I mean, obviously, that, you know, that's still a possibility. You know, it's just so tough to know with something that we haven't really seen before.
Yeah, but I did like the idea of reaching out. Why? I know that you've got a lot of column inches to fill, but and you guys have always done something with the local media, but why reach out to the regional and maybe even national guys?
Yeah, I just thought, obviously, with this being such a unique schedule and a unique season, I thought, I feel like we're kind of hitting these points in the Stoops era clearly we are seeing this program go up and up, and I just thought this might be the best time to reach out and kind of reach around the league and kind of see what they thought, and added in the fact that everybody that Kentucky plays is going to be within the league. So I thought it'd be just kind of cool to see what everybody thought. And I was surprised by how many actually asked it at all 13 markets and some other national people. I was still surprised at how many responses we got back and how many thoughtful responses. Clearly this is a team that other people are looking at and studying closely.
Ben, this will be week one for the SEC teams, but week four in college football. And already we're getting close to double-digit games that have been canceled due to COVID-19. We saw Charlotte, North Carolina, Baylor, Houston, and now most recently Notre Dame, Wake Forest having to be canceled for this Saturday after some Notre Dame players tested positive. Should we expect that we're going to have to miss a game here in this season? I know this is a lot of unknowns in 2020, but should we expect as fans, SEC fans, that there are going to be some issues and there may be a week that teams have to take off?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if I were like placing a bet on which way it would go, what I would say, but certainly you have to go into this season at least expecting that's a good possibility, just what we've seen around the country. And you're adding even more teams into the pool of college football games, obviously, this week and beyond. So, yeah, I mean, I think if the SEC were to get through and all games go on as scheduled, that would be pretty remarkable when you really think about it.
Ben, in your piece, you also asked me and the other SEC media members for their SEC championship game prediction. And I was wondering, were there any surprises in there, or was it all the basic Alabama, Georgia, or Alabama, Florida?
Yeah, I think it was pretty much. I know Daryl Bird, I think, had a Texas A&M, Georgia, maybe. I know he had Texas A&M in there. He might have been the only one who didn't have Alabama coming out of the West. It might have been LSU, but off the top of my head, I can't remember one. I didn't get a response from the LSU writers, so maybe that's why we didn't get one. But, yeah, everybody else in the West had Alabama. And then I didn't tally it up, but it was pretty even between Florida and Georgia. And I was – obviously, Georgia's quarterback situation hurts them going into the season with the opt-out, but I was a little surprised we had so many Floridas there.
Yeah, I was too, and Texas A&M is intriguing. I've read two different articles about A&M, I mean, more than two, but one of them said, don't be surprised. I don't think Daryl wrote this one either. Don't be surprised if A&M jumps up and wins the division. They're that good. And I read another article that said, don't buy into Texas A&M. It's the biggest overachiever. It's the most overrated team in the SEC West. So that's what makes it fun. But, you know, the one thing that we know about all these teams, Ben, they've all got really good players. And so does Auburn, you know. And I think Derek Terry was telling us the other night that, you know, Auburn still has more 4 stars than Kentucky and a few 5 stars. Which Kentucky does not have. So it may not be an Auburn team capable of knocking off Alabama, but Auburn's still Auburn, right?
They are, and you mentioned players, and I know Stoops talked about this yesterday, but you got to talk about the coaches too. When you got Chad Morris coming in there with the offense, and then obviously Gus Malzahn, and then on the defensive side, I mean, and that's not just Auburn. And I think that's something important that Stoops also hit on yesterday. And I'm sure he's preparing the fan base for how tough this grind is really going to be. But you don't see too many bad coaches in the SEC. Once you get to SEC football, and not just head coaches, but coordinators and down the line, you're going to see some really not only great players, but really, really well-prepared players for what they're going to see on the other side. And I mean, this is, you mentioned this being the most intriguing league-wide. This is a tough ask for this Kentucky team to go down there on week one. You know, you're not even getting a cupcake game or two before this. You're just being thrown right to the fire.
You know, and looking at that staff, of course, Kevin Steele is well known as a D coordinator. But I had forgotten that the defensive backs coach was Wes McGriff, a former Kentucky assistant coach. He had actually coached at Kentucky State. I don't remember the order, but I think it was K-State, EKU, and UK. So here's a guy who took 3 different college coaching jobs and, you know, only had to buy one house. Never had to move, you know. So, but he, you know, he is part of an accomplished staff, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, just straight down the line and from Malzahn to the coordinators on down. And that's, again, that's the norm. You just to be a position coach in this league, you have to be very, very experienced or very, very good at what you do, or in most cases, both of those things.
Ben, being a reporter in the strange year that is 2020, we can ask Aaron this question as well a little later, but what do you lose doing only Zoom interviews with all these guys? Is there a part of it that you miss being in front of a guy and being able to interview somebody post-game or pre-game? What's the difference there? Are you not getting the same information if you were to interview them in person?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really, you can't overstate it. It's invaluable to be with people in person. not only, you know, games are probably the most overrated part of it just because there's such a scrum and there's so many people around each player. But take media day, for instance, where you have literally a whole football field and guys just standing around and you get to have one-on-one conversations with pretty much every, maybe not the quarterbacks, but pretty much anybody else you want on the team. You can talk to them for 5 or 10 minutes on your own. And not only does that get you a lot of insight about what's going on with the team, what's going on with those individuals, but it plants a lot of seeds in your head for stories later on down the season, for preseason stories. And sometimes it's just casual conversation after you're doing an interview, just, you know, asking how a guy's, you know, doing off the field or whatever. And it leads to some pretty interesting and unique things about that particular person. So, you know, not only do you not get to know the players nearly as well with these Zoom sessions, but I feel like you don't have as many opportunities to get the more unique stories and to kind of get at some different areas of what they're all about.
Ben, just looking here at your personal prediction, and you have Kentucky at 6-4 and picking up at least one of those upset wins against an Auburn or Tennessee, Florida, Georgia. Which game do you see them pulling the upset, and why is 6-4 the record you came to?
Yeah, 6-4, I was kind of leaning 5-5 going into it, but then the more I thought about it, one, I mean, a team with a great offensive line, you have to give them the benefit of the doubt if you're, I think, weighing between one record and the next. And Kentucky, obviously, is going to have a great offensive line. And just the continuity of the coaching staff and Mark Stoops and really on down the line, I think this is going to be one of those really, really well-prepared teams. I could definitely see them winning Saturday. In my mind, I didn't really lock in, I don't think, in those picks to one upset. In my mind, it was going to be Tennessee, and that's just because, like I said, you're asking week one for this team to go down to Auburn, and I know, you know, obviously it won't be the same in the stands and the stadium environment won't be the same, but that's a really, really good football team, really well-prepared football team. And, you know, your quarterback, as great as I think Trey Wilson can be, that's really tough to throw him in there. You know, as Stoops said yesterday, there's not going to be a whole lot of green space. There's not going to be guys that are just streaking wide open that he's going to be able to throw to. He's got some talented running backs he can rely on. He's got a great offensive line he can rely on. But you don't get to play against a cupcake or two to get your feet back under you, to take that first big hit, to kind of settle in. And that's, I think that's going to be a real tough part and a tough ask for them on Saturday.
Well, Ben, we'll let you go with this. If indeed they do pull off the upset, and the odds makers say it would be a formidable upset, you know, a touchdown to a 10-point underdog, if they do this, and Stoops has got signature wins. I've heard people say he still needs a signature win. No, he's got at least half a dozen. But what would it mean to this program with a capital P if they can beat Auburn down there on an opener?
Well, I mean, it's huge, and it's, again, not only the most intriguing matchup in the league, but it's one that I think people are going to be paying attention to around the country. So if you can come in and make a statement game like that, win a statement game like that on the road week one, and then coming back home with Ole Miss and Mississippi State 1-2 after that, you know, you got a chance to start this season off really, really well and make a lot of waves nationally. And as we always talk about, that always helps in recruiting too, because they're going to be paying attention to it as well.
Absolutely. Ben Roberts of the Herald Leader, Kentucky.com. Follow him on Twitter at BenRobertsHL. Thank you, sir. You're not going, are you?
Nope, I'm not. I'll be here watching on TV like pretty much everybody else.
Yeah, and keep your radio handy too, my brother.
Absolutely, I will. We'll be following you too.
Thanks, man. Have a good one. And we're back to talk more football. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll dip into the NFL as well here on 630 WLAP.
This is the home of the Wildcats, 630 WLAP.
Cannot wait. Yours truly, Tom Leach, Jeff Pecoro will be actually at the game calling the action. Network pregame show begins at 10, KSR pregame at 9. Kickoff at noon Eastern for Kentucky and Auburn on this very radio station. Yours truly, along with Billy Rutledge, Aaron Gershon. All right, we teased this a couple times, kept running into commercial breaks. If you saw any NFL highlights from Sunday, you saw the comeback by the hated Cowboys. I hate them. Aaron hates them. Billy probably does on general principle. But I know a lot of you out there like them. Got to tip your cap. They came from way down to beat the Falcons, who have blown two of the biggest leads in the history of the game. Looking back at that Super Bowl, of course, when they were up 28-3. But they blew this one in so many ways. And one of them was the strangest onside kick anybody ever saw. But, Billy, it should not have come to the Cowboys even having a chance to pounce on the ball. It wasn't one of those patented small hop, big hop kicks. It was a squibber, a roller, and the Falcons stood there and watched it, and any one of those guys could have fallen on the football at any time before it went the proper amount of yards, giving the Cowboys a chance. And, you know, there's a lame excuse from the coach, and the owner says, well, they didn't know the rules, which I don't believe, but they just froze. And that's one of the biggest mental blunders I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was surreal. It was definitely the high point of my Sunday, and especially the week two in the NFL. It, just such a crazy game for the boys to be down 15 points with less than 5 minutes to go. And then, like you said, them freezing is the best way to describe it. You know, I kind of look at the coaching staff here, Dick. I know the owner said the players don't know the rule, but I think it's the coaching staff job to know that that's coming and to reiterate to your guys what to do. Now, there's two types of onside kicks, right? You got the high bouncer, which Julio Jones was ready to get. He was back, or he was 10 yards back, ready to receive that. Or you have that slow roller, and where the guys out front normally are supposed to block, they're responsible for being aggressive and falling on the ball. And, you know, those are also skill guys. They're receivers, they're tight ends. Hayden Hurst was right there. They're talented players. So I think they know the rules, but when you're in the other side of a comeback and, you know you're in Jerry World, it all the variables came together, and those guys absolutely did not do the right thing. And, man, good luck keeping your job, Dan Quinn, because Falcon fans are fed up.
Well, but here's the thing, too. I've heard a lot of football people say, you wasn't a high hopper, but it wasn't the usual slow roller. It was, I don't know how to describe it, but the bottom line is someone should have recognized the fact and known the rules well enough. And I don't blame the coaches. I blame the guys that are out there. How long have they been playing football? You know, the coaches can't go out and make the plays for them. How long have they been playing football? And you're on special teams and you're a professional. You got to know that rule. And you got to be ready for anything. Aaron, jump in here. I know you hate the Cowboys, being a Giants fan.
Yeah, and I thought it was going to be my silver lining with another Giants loss, is the Eagles and Cowboys would both be 0-2, and you'd have Washington 1-1, and they're still, you know. Anyway, but, yeah, it's the most Atlanta thing of all time, obviously. Since that Super Bowl that they choked away against New England, they've found interesting ways to lose ever since, and and like Billy said, it's got to fall on the coaching staff. You have to teach your team if they really don't know that. That's something you got to prepare for and practice and with your special teams coordinator. So, yeah, I don't know how Dan Quinn survived last year. I thought they had a pretty talented roster and went, I think, 7-9 and started really like 1-7 and kind of saw their season end before it even started. So, yeah, that's a painful way to lose, and it's probably going to get Dallas going too, because that, as much as I hate to admit it, this is the most talented roster Dallas has had in a while.
Yeah, hate to say that. More to come, 630 WLAP.
You're listening to Big Blue Insider with Dick Gabriel on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com. Don't want to be an American idiot. Don't want a nation under
the new media. Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. Dick Gabriel, Billy Rutledge, Aaron Gershon. We have talked a lot of football tonight. We will keep right on doing that this week because it's game week. Wildcats and Auburn coming at you on Saturday at noon. We'll have it right here on 630 WLAP. We were talking a little bit of pro football before the break. We were talking about how the Falcons fell apart. But the biggest story of the week was the injuries, and probably the shock heard around the NFL affected guys like Aaron more than anybody, and that was Saquon Barkley going down. He, of course, plays for the Giants, who didn't have a whole lot of promise anyway this year. But Giants fans, management, players, everybody looking for the opportunity to improve. But now arguably the most valuable player in the franchise is going to be gone for at least a calendar year, as Barkley went out not just with an ACL tear, but he also suffered a meniscus tear and an MCL sprain. So that really means, Aaron, that they're going to have to wait 2 to 4 weeks to operate because they got to wait for the swelling to go down. And it also depends on it. Does the meniscus need to be put back together or just trimmed? I am a veteran of 3 meniscus operations. It can be a little complicated, but bottom line is you won't see him the rest of the year, and he may not be 100% at the start of next year. Why finish the year? Why not just put the helmets away and go home?
Just quit.
Look, I mean, first of all, I'm gutted for the kid. He is such a special talent. There are a few guys in the NFL that can hurdle defenders and cut the way that Barkley can when he's on. I know that first game he took a lot of heat for his pass protection, but all you have to do is go turn on the tape from his first 2 years in the NFL and what he was doing at Penn State and know what type of talent he is. And he's a leader in that Giants locker room. He's been a captain the last 2 years. And let's face it, I know the Giants aren't very good right now. The Jets are even worse. Saquon Barkley is the face of football in New York City. And you know what? He might be the, outside of Aaron Judge and maybe Jacob deGrom, he's probably the face of New York sports right now. And that's the biggest market in the world. So it's a horrible loss for the Giants, obviously, who I think there's no denying that the defense looks a hell of a lot better than it has the last 3 years. They're playing much more physical. They were able to get 4 sacks on Sunday against Chicago and turn them over 2 or 3 times, I believe. So the improvement is happening. I'm not saying this is ever going to be a playoff team. I was hoping, I was thinking if you want to see real improvement with this Giants team, you win 7 to 8 games this year and you move into possibly competing next year.
Yeah.
Still think that's possible. I don't know about the 7 to 8 wins, but I still think it's possible they can compete by next year. But it's just a gutting blow. He's so much fun to watch when he's on and when the offensive line is blocking for him. It's hard to pick a running back that's better than him in the NFL right now, and just the talent he has. And it's just awful. And then you look, but then you look at the Giants' opponent this week, and I'll kind of tease that as you were talking about the injury stick. The San Francisco 49ers, oh, aim you can think of on that team, probably isn't playing this week against the Giants.
Yeah.
So the Giants have a real chance to, you know, salvage their season or at least keep it alive by taking advantage of a team that's literally depleted.
If you were playing in a Survivor League, as I think all 3 of us are, this would have been the perfect week to take the Niners. And yet, I wouldn't touch them right now, as you said, because of all those injuries. And Billy, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo used to play with your man Brady, and he became an overnight sensation in San Francisco. He's out. Bosa's out. I mean, man, there's something in the water.
Yeah, and it's a lot more than that. Raheem Mostert hurt his knee.
Yeah.
He's going to be out for a while. Tevin Coleman is going to be out a while, so they'll have to rely on Jerick McKinnon a lot. And lucky news for Jimmy G, he might be making a return a little sooner than expected. But still, I mean, even with Nick Bosa being out for the rest of the year, they were hit the worst. But, you know, I said this to a friend the other day. It's not if you won or lost your fantasy game in week 2. Is did you survive week 2? And it really was surreal to see everybody going down with injuries. And hopefully this was just an outlier and not a precursor of, you know, no preseason games and the lack of prep to start the year.
Yeah, I think that's the case. And it seems like every season there's one week where there are more injuries than others. It just seemed like, you know, the high-profile guys were hurt, including Christian McCaffrey. And, you know, if you want to talk about it, I mean, you hate it for the kid, and he has become a favorite in the NFL, not just in Charlotte, North Carolina, or in the Carolinas, period, north and south. But this is a guy who in a lot of fantasy leagues across the country might have been the number one pick. You know, he's the guy who racks up yards, racks up touchdowns. And with Cam Newton gone, it had become the face of the franchise. And he will be 4 to 6 weeks, but I don't know that he'll be fully functional after week six. But, Aaron, you talk about a weird weekend when arguably the top two running backs in the league go down.
Yeah, and just to finish Billy's point on San Francisco, it goes even further than the guys he mentioned, which is crazy. George Kittle is questionable
this
last week. Dee Ford is out for the next couple weeks. Deebo Samuel is already out for the year. It's just unbelievable what's happened to that team. And now you look at the NFC West, they might be the worst team in that division with Arizona, the way the Rams are playing, and the Seahawks. So crazy stuff there. But, yeah, on the running back front, I mean, I'd say fantasy-wise, just given what they could do both in the run and passing game, I think McCaffrey, Barkley went 1-2 in nearly every draft. And I know I had a buddy in my league who has Barkley, and he knows I'm a huge Giants fan, was not happy week one, and he texted me before the game saying, if he doesn't get 20, I'm taking it out on you because you're a Giants fan. I texted him, he's not going to another point the rest of the season. He tore his ACL, and then he didn't respond back till today. So it's definitely a tough pill to swallow for fantasy owners. And as a football fan, I mean, there's so many great players that went down this weekend. Nick Bosa is becoming one of the defensive stars in this league. Cortland Sutton in Denver had a great year at a second year at SMU. He's out for the year. Drew Locke, former SEC guy, is going to miss 5 weeks.
Yep.
I mean, brutal. And I was just glad to see last night's game, we were able to get through it without anyone going down with all the stars on both that Vegas team that looks really good and then obviously the Saints.
Didn't Raheem Mostert go for like 75 yards and a touchdown?
80 yards on the first play.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So now I won't have him. But I'm glad I got that.
Wow. Well, he's got an MCL sprain, and you don't have to operate on them, but it's still going to sideline him for 3 or 4 weeks, I think. But, man, it was so strange. By the way, one of the benefits of covering Kentucky and seeing all kinds of injuries, as I have through the years, is I was able to develop a relationship with Jim Maddalena, who was the essentially – forgive me, Jim, if you're listening. I don't know exactly what your title was all those years, but he was the head trainer. And Jim taught me a lot about injuries, and when they say this, they mean that, and that sort of thing. And Jim is now director of sports medicine, so he is. I don't even know if he's going to be at all the games, or obviously he's not going to be at all the games, but at any rate, he's not the guy running out on the field anymore. But he taught me what a high ankle sprain is. So when you hear about high ankle sprains, the first thing you've got to remember is, I don't care if Billy and Aaron both have high ankle sprains, that doesn't, and they hurt them on the same day, that doesn't mean they're going to come back in the same amount of time, because there's a level of severity, but there's also the matter of pain management. Because here's the thing, and this is what Jim taught me. Put your hand on your ankle. You know those two knobs that stick out? That's the part of the ankle where when you have a high ankle sprain, the ligaments that hold that ankle in place, that part of the ankle, that's the ligament that is stretched. And when you think about stretching, you remember those plastic rings that they may still have them that hold six packs together?
Oh yeah, I see them every Friday night.
Yeah. Oh, good for you, every Friday night. I know that they've come up with more ecologically friendly ways to hold those together, but some of them still have them. And when you try to pull them apart, you can't always break them. Sometimes they just stay stretched. That's what happens sometimes with those ligaments. And what that means is when you put your foot down, the bone that meets those knobs, those are bones, and there's bones within the bone, they slide. Because the ligaments can't keep them in place. And again, this is a layman trying to explain medical stuff, but this is the way Jim explained it to me, because he knows I'm not very bright. But anyhow, when you think about that, you put your foot down, and those bones that go up and meet there are sliding around. Brother, that hurts, because those ligaments can't quite keep them in place. And those ligaments, I've been told by a couple of doctors, will never fully be the same. But the rehab, it comes almost all the way back, but the rehab involves strengthening the muscles around them so that eventually you can get back to as close to what you were as you can. But it hurts like mad. So if it's a bad high ankle sprain, you can barely walk. If it's a mild high ankle sprain, you'll be back quicker. So when you think about Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, a quarterback who's got to drop back and plant. I don't know which leg it was for Garoppolo. Aaron, do you remember which leg he hurt?
Let me get on that. I can't tell you with positivity what it was.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, it's not the same as a running back. And by the way, Patrick Mahomes last year had a high ankle sprain. He was able to play through it, but he wasn't 100%, but he sure played.
It was the right ankle for Jimmy G.
So that's his plant leg, isn't it?
Yeah.
He throws. Yeah. So that's got to be tough. But anyhow, I try to remind myself of that when I hear about these high ankle sprains, because it comes down to pain management like so many different injuries. But you got to think, man, if you're an NFL player and you're hitting or being hit, you know, it's like how many players have told us, it's like being in a car accident every time you carry the ball, right?
Yeah, and that's why they got such a short shelf life, yeah, especially these running backs. But I enjoyed that breakdown, Dick, and I was cringing the entire time just feeling my ankle and just trying to decipher how that would feel.
Admit it, you put your hand on your ankle, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, I did too. When Jim explained that to me and I went back to the radio station, I started thinking about it and I started rubbing my leg. And I've never had one of those. You know, and part of the reason is that there are more people. I've heard the old timers say, "We never had high ankle sprains." Well, no, because you didn't wear high top shoes probably, or you didn't tape your ankles up well beyond the ankle. And so those ankle bones. So what that means is, they only taped their ankles when they were hurt. And when you tape it like that and you tape it tight, something's got to give. And in the past, it used to be the ligaments around the bottom part of the foot or the ankle. Now, oftentimes, it's up around the top. So you rob Peter, you pay Paul, and you got
to
sit out.
Well, Dick, do we need to put some tape on Benny Snell's hands? I mean, two straight
that
games,
two fumbles.
That
was a costly fumble, and that could have cost him the game.
And you know what? It could have cost, I wouldn't say cost him because it's the Giants, but it really could have hurt him against the Giants because, first of all, there were five blue jerseys around the ball, and Juju Smith-Schuster made one of the more heads-up plays I've ever seen, coming in out of nowhere to go down to the bottom of a pile of, literally, it was Juju and six Giants, and he comes up with the ball. So typical Giants, but great play by Schuster. And at that point in the game, the Giants are still only down a score. It was the same. It was the drive after the 19-play drive, and Jones gets hit by Dupree and throws one up for grabs that gets picked off by a D lineman. And if the Giants get the ball back right there, first of all, they would have been inside Steeler territory, and they're going right back down the field after already tiring the Steelers' defense out. So he gets bailed out, but it was more costly this week, obviously.
How good is Bud Dupree? I'm glad you brought him
so
up.
Good.
How well has he been playing?
He's the defensive player of the year right now, early on, no
yeah,
doubt.
I agree. And, boy, is he going to get paid, isn't he?
Yeah, but he made the right call just signing a one-year deal and
yeah,
not, you know, out for anything because it's going to pay off big time. He's only, what, 28? So he's still kind of in that prime. He should get paid big.
He's not going to stay with Pittsburgh, obviously. I want to see him in Green Bay. You want to see him in New York. Billy, you want to see him in Tampa. My guess is he'll have a lot of choices. Well, one more note on a fumble. Who's a guy who never fumbles and had a huge fumble Sunday?
I know who it is, and it's flipping me now that you have me on the spot.
He plays 90 miles away. Come on.
Addy.
Joe Mixon.
Mixon fumbled. That's right.
He never fumbles.
He doesn't.
And the fumble that he made cost his team the game. That's what I'm saying. Benny cost
right,
his team a touchdown, but the Steelers were, because the other guys went in and scored, but the Steelers were able to withstand it and absorb it. The Bengals,
yep,
their margin for error is so slim.
Yeah.
And you talk about a guy who's money with a football, he never fumbles. And that cost Joe Burrow his first win.
I was going to say, Joe Burrow, I mean, their defense is atrocious. He has hardly any time to throw. But, wow, has Joe Burrow been good. I mean, no interceptions yet. He really has put them in a place to be 2-0. Just the other weaknesses on their team have taken it away from him.
There's no question they ought to be 2-0. But their Bengals got a Bengal. That's all there is to it. We'll take a break. Back in a few, 630 WLAP.
This is the home of the Wildcats, 630 WLAP.
Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider, final segment of our program. Thanks again to Van Hiles and Ben Roberts for joining us. This time last year, around this time, our own Aaron Gershon was, I think it might have been a little deeper into September, Aaron, maybe not, but Aaron was in the locker room in Cincinnati, the visitors' locker room, when the Milwaukee Brewers wrapped up the Central Division Championship. And Aaron was actually freelancing as a stringer, covering for a radio station in Milwaukee and gathering interviews and comments and things like that as Milwaukee sprayed the champagne and celebrated a divisional title. Well, that ain't going to happen this year, but right now Milwaukee is part of a five-team race with the Reds to win the NL wildcard slot. Right now the Reds lead Milwaukee 2-1 top of the fifth inning in Cincinnati. They've got one more game with the Brewers after this one, and three at Minnesota. But Milwaukee right now is a full game behind the Reds, two games in the win column and even in the loss column. Cubs are going to win the division. My Cardinals are second, but they've got some work to do because, well, they haven't played as many games, obviously, because of all the COVID stuff. Then Cincinnati, then Milwaukee in the Central. Philly is between Cincy and Milwaukee in the wild card. So the Reds, Aaron, were really struggling. Suddenly they're hot. Now they got a good shot. They can control their own destiny, right?
Well, that's the beauty of the 18 postseason, right? I mean, yeah. They're in line, I should say, to get one of those two bonus spots. And now with the rules, your Cardinals locked in because all the second-place teams get in. But, yeah, I mean, it's been a very impressive week and a half. And luckily for the Reds, you know, they've, like you said, Dick, they've struggled. They've had their weeks. But they never went on that 10-game, right. 10-game losing streak that in a season like this you can't survive. And also going for them, you know, outside of the Cubs, the Braves and the Dodgers, the NL is just not very good. It's very toxic. So everybody's beating up on each other, and the Reds have stayed in the race. And with their pitching staff, really all they got to do is get in. Because with how the playoffs are working this year, it's a three-game wild card round, first round, three-man rotation. And the Reds with Greg Castillo and the other one's slipping me right now, Bauer, of course, that's as good as it gets in the NL.
Well, and last night was huge for the Reds. They beat the Brewers, as I said, and everybody else lost that they needed to lose. St. Louis,
right.
Philly, and San Francisco all lost. So, you know, you don't want to back your way in. You can. But the way the Reds have been playing, they need to keep winning, and they've been doing it. So, right now they got a shot.
Real quick. Is it the most 2020 thing ever that the Miami Marlins are going to make the playoffs? And do you realize Miami Marlins in their team history, they've been to the playoffs twice, both as wild card teams, only been twice. They won the World Series both times.
And what happened? What happened immediately after that?
Never made the playoffs again.
You know why? They broke up the team. They sold
they
everybody
the
off.
That's right.
To save
Jones,
money.
They got Beckett, yeah.
How'd you like to be a Marlins? Billy, you're from Florida.
Hey, my Tampa Bay Rays about to win the East. So.
Well, that's fine, but another Florida team, the Marlins, they win the World Series. And
make it.
Well, anyway, I'm a Cardinals fan, so I'm still alive, so we'll keep you posted.
Sorry.
Thanks a lot to our guests, to Aaron, to Billy. That's it. Good night from the garage in Lexington.